Alex is a friend of mine, and he is top 10 in the world now, all-time greatest powerlifters in the 90-kilogram division.
That's it, yep.
So you've achieved that like only recently, right? Like a couple of weeks ago?
Yeah, 2 weeks ago.
Wow. So, yeah. Massive strength, strongman. So I kind of just want to get inside and share with people like your inner world that takes, you know, a state, a brain state to be able to go through such intensity of lifting body. Lifting other people's bodies through weights. what got you into it to begin with?
I don't know. I was always into just like regular sort of just lifting at the gym. Like I started going when I was 15, just because I was a bit overweight and, you know, was self-conscious about that. And then just loved that. And then just things progressed from there, you know. So like started off just like circuit training, and then you like start talking to other people and they show you different things, and got into strength training. So
you're telling me yesterday when you did the when you're in the competition, like this kind of mindsets that you have to go into in those moments of absolutely do or die. Like you don't even do the weight that you want to set until you're in the gym. Like you just, you're saying how you gauge, say you're at 320, you pulled a 320 in the bench to 320, say in the gym. And then you like, I need to get 335 or whatever. And then you gauge, you don't want to use that, do that 335 bench until you're in the competition. So you use that moment. But if you did the 320 fast, you're like, I'm on set for it.
Yeah, so those weights, they're just so taxing to do in the gym when you're doing your regular, like if I'm training 5 days a week, like 6 days a week, and I'm lifting those weights, it's just, yeah, it takes too long to recover. So you need to do something heavy enough so that you know where you're at without actually going there, because it doesn't really matter what you do in the gym, it matters what you do at the comp.
And you're saying it, and it's not taxing on your muscles so much as it's taxing on your actual nervous system.
Yeah, it's a nervous system, because you're only doing one rep. So on your muscular system, it's definitely nowhere near as taxing.
I mean, look at you. Of course it ain't.
Yeah, it's nowhere near as taxing as doing like, you know, 10, 15 reps or something like that. But on your nervous system, just all your neurons are just firing just to like hold that position under such heavy load.
It's crazy. And then you're saying like the mindset, which I really got inspired by, like you have this mindset going into it with absolute zero doubt, because you're saying like, I mean, you're telling me about how your whole anatomy has to be entirely rigid in order, like there's no weak points whatsoever.
Yeah. So every joint that isn't moving in the lift needs to be as rigid as possible.
And if that's not the case, bad, like you're not going to be able to pull it off, basically.
Yeah, well, it's just not as efficient. Not like efficient. That force output is just sort of like being dispersed and not going straight into the bar.
So. Man, you're a machine. That's like a machine situation.
Yeah, that's what, yeah, that's, you're trying, I tell my lifters that you want to try and be like a robot.
Right.
Yeah. You, like it's programmed in you and you want to do it exactly the same every single time.
That's right. Because I remember when, like early days when we started meditating together, you were saying like, oh, if any trouble goes down in this situation, we're just talking hypotheticals, like Alex has got my back, but you're like, I'd actually only be able to help in very particular motions.
Yeah.
Because you've got like three perfectly executed strength motions.
Yeah, exactly. My boss, so like the owner of my gym, always, you know, gives me shit because like anything outside of the squat, bench and deadlift, I'm just like so weak. And no, I move well, but I'm just like, if I don't train it, like I'm just weak.
You can't do a single push. You can't do a single like sit up.
Well, he tried to show me these like a bodybuilding shoulder exercise, and I could only use like 5 kilo weights.
Whoa.
Yeah. Like we're doing like 20 reps or something, but I was wrecked by the
end of that. So that means like, say you like, for example, I'm touching your shoulder now. Like if say you've got really strong muscle there, on your like on your deltoid or whatever it is, and then but there's one that's under there that never needs to be used for your thing. Does that mean that you got like really little weak muscles in those points?
No, I would say that I have pretty strong stabilizing muscles. It was just the stuff that he was trying to show me. So like bodybuilding is pretty much the opposite of powerlifting. Powerlifting, you're trying to put everything together to make the most efficient system, so everything's working together to lift the most weight. Whereas bodybuilding, you're trying to like isolate a certain muscle, so you're putting your body in the most disadvantaged position possible.
Oh wow!
To load the muscle, yeah. So
in order to make it pop out.
Yeah. So he had me just in this position that I was never in, to isolate this one muscle, and I was like, by the end, just like, just couldn't even lift my arms.
That's so fascinating. That's like one thing that I compare that to is like this guy that's teaching me movement at the moment,
yeah.
And how it's like it's all a fluid thing of like every little bit from your wrist all the way up your arm and the energy flow, and like if you exercise every single little muscle in your entire anatomy, you've got this capability of flowing communication and awareness from one to the next.
Yeah,
I mean, it sounds. I'm sure like that would play into it massively in terms of for the power strength stuff, because everything's absolutely connected.
You know? Yeah. Yeah. That's the hardest part. The hardest part, like touching on what we were saying before about keeping everything rigid while you're moving, that like having that awareness to do that is super hard. And you know, what you were sort of saying is like, it's sort of like a similar thing.
And then the other thing is when you did this competition where you just like got top 10 of all time, by the way, that's not like just current. I mean, it is currently,
yeah.
But all time in all of history, top 10 in the 90 kilogram division in the world, total, weight, which is 900, how many kilograms was that total?
857.5.
I started higher and it is like, yeah. It's ridiculous, but that's like your 90 kilograms when you lift 800. So bonkers. But you're saying when going into it that your mindset is like, I've got this, the state of consciousness. Can you talk to us a bit about that when you're going in to really, really push yourself?
Yeah, well, I never used to be, like I had to develop this sort of thing, and doing the meditation with you like definitely helped. Just sort of because it's quite chaotic in the... I'm just talking about comp day. So it's quite chaotic in the warm-up room. And I sort of use that observer thing with the meditation to sort of like rise above and sort of...
get outside of the energy that's there.
And not get tangled up in everything that's happening around you. And that just sort of leaves my mind clear to then work on that, you know... sort of like having no doubt sort of thing.
Yeah, so, right. Because you're saying that you just go into it and like, it is like, I'm going to lift this. And this.
Yeah, so that the thing I'll say, which I actually got from my barber, because it was funny, because the first time, so I used to hold the all-time Australian record. This guy took it off me. But so that was back in September. And when I went to get my haircut like 2 days before, I was telling my barber what I wanted to achieve. And he's like, oh yeah, just go do that. And I just thought that was just the funniest way to put it, like as if I'm just gonna go like grocery shopping or something like that. Like there's no doubt in that. And I used that in that comp, and I didn't miss a lift, got the all-time Australian record. And I actually forgot about that between that comp and the Arnold Classic, which was in March. Mm-hmm. I was a little bit all over the place anyway, and I sort of didn't have... Yeah, I just sort of forgot about that. But I think I needed that comp I was saying to yesterday to sort of kick me in the ass. And then when it came around to Nationals, which was the one 2 weeks ago, I remembered that sort of... that mantra, I guess. Like, that, just go do it.
Amazing.
Yeah.
And so, like, you felt... because you said the guy that was strapping you, or, you know, like, preparing you and helping you... What was the thing that you said he observed in you again?
Oh, he said that I was creeping him out. Because I was just... well, he said like, you were so on, but you just almost look creepy because you're just sitting there, like, in this chair just in the middle of the room with your eyes closed, just, like, metal blasting.
In your headphones.
In my headphones. And I was just totally calm, and, like my breath was just so, you know, slow and controlled. While, you know, there's all this chaos happening around me, so...
and everyone else is, like, psyching up, and you were just being still.
Yeah.
Basically.
Yeah. And I do get psyched up, like, just before.
Yeah.
But I feel like that's wasted energy.
Headbutt a brick wall. Standard.
There's people, like, headbutt the bar, and they're, like, bleeding.
No.
And there's, like, blood coming down their face. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, there's a couple of guys from Perth One guy that owns a gym in Perth, and then like one of his sort of best lifters.
The bar butters.
Yeah, they'd have to clean the bar after that.
Yeah, true, man. Yeah. You ain't lifting that shit.
Yeah.
You got to get that bloody blood on you.
Yeah. Luckily, that guy squats like 400 kilos, so.
What?
Yeah.
That's bonkers. So he's allowed to get his blood on the bar.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's nuts. It's just like, the thing when I see that stuff is because all I'm aware of is like my body's capabilities, and then I imagine myself doing something like that and just seeing my knees cave in, my arms like pop out of joint. Yeah. Like or my body just breaking down. So that's the thing, when you see something like this, it's so impressive because it's so far from what you know you're
yeah hearing. That whole spectrum of strength is huge, because people come in to so I work at a gym in South Melbourne called PTC South Melbourne, yeah.
Yeah.
And so we get people coming in who've been training on their own, like in a commercial gym, and they consider themselves pretty strong. Mm. Like they might have like 120 or 140 kilo squat, which like I'm sure to you, like that's stronger than
it's more than
the average person.
Yeah.
But then they come in to our gym and there's guys squatting like 280, 300, 320, and it's just like they're just, it blows their mind, like how people can do that. And then on the like a world scale, like there's people, I think the biggest squat is 505.
Oh, how big is that? How much does that human weigh?
He weighs I think he's like 160 ish. Yeah, he's a guy from Israel.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's just, it's just crazy what the human is capable of doing.
Mm.
And what do you think it is about, like in us energetically on a more spiritual level, that takes, like, for, well, I mean, I suppose all you can speak is of yourself, but like what it, why it's there to do, to exert yourself this way. Like what took you to
like,
this path?
What about like strength is
appealing to you? Cause you're obviously like a really in tune guy. Like you're not a meathead, like in that
stereotypical sense,
all due respect,
sense,
but
yeah.
Like you're not like like aggressive and want to punch me in the face, or like you're very gentle and lovely.
Yeah, like I'm not. Yeah, I think a lot of people do it like because they might have it's like an outlet because they have like a lot of anger and it's like a typically sort of masculine thing to do.
Mm.
For me, I don't know. I think it's more about just. Well, definitely. So I've always struggled with expressing myself. Like I've always been really quiet.
Mm.
And then going into, and this is like a form of expression for sure.
Yeah.
It's an outlet. And it's like a way to sort of do that.
Do something with action.
Yeah.
Rather than your voice.
Yeah, definitely. And now, like I still struggle with that sort of fear of expression a little bit, but like I'm definitely I mean the fact that I'm even talking to this microphone is like you know, is a big thing for me. But yeah, now it's more about just like it's more the mental thing, like seeing how far I can push it.
Yeah.
And like how, because I know now at my level I need to like be in that mindset of an elite athlete, and it's like pretty exciting because it's like a 24/7 thing. Like every action you make is like, well, is this going to help me towards my goal?
Yeah, because your body is your work. It's crazy.
Yeah.
So what's going on in your mind, do you think, like if you had to pinpoint some thought patterns or cycles when you're hesitant, I guess, about vocal expression, like speaking? And why are they not there in a physical expression, you know, like with your work?
Yeah, I guess, well, I've just been lifting since I was 15. I'm like 20, almost 27 now, so it's just not, it's like a, it's just my thing, so I don't know, I don't even think about that. In terms of vocal expression, just like judgment, I guess, like I've always just like been told that I'm like, Alex, you're quiet, Alex, you're awkward, stuff like that. So if you're just, you know, getting told that all the time, yeah, I just really filter like what's coming out of my mouth. So, and it's easier just not to say anything sometimes. So.
It's true. It is. It's much easier.
Yeah.
Well, it's safer, isn't it?
It's safer. Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
But, it kind of inhibits a part of like a natural process that we want to do. We want to have it. And I suppose that's probably why you're excelling so much, is because you're not, maybe you don't feel so free to express yourself speaking wise. And so you've poured all your expression energy into your work, and that's why you're expressing yourself so successfully, maybe.
Yeah, yeah, exactly, yeah.
So is your work, or like, you know, as a powerlifter, your therapy in that sense? Or is it, I mean, it's obviously your passion. You absolutely love it.
Yeah. Well, so there's different parts of it. So the actual lifting is just, that's the safe side because that just feels like home.
Yeah.
And that's what I tell myself when I get up on the platform now, that that's my home.
Right.
So that's all part of that. But, so the other part, so the coaching side of it, I'm the head coach of a team of 80 lifters.
Crazy.
So I can't be quiet. I have to speak. So I've had to learn to do that. But that's been a great learning experience over the past couple of years, having to, I have to speak and be vocal and, to coach. So there's one. So I do a powerlifting basics program twice a week, where we have a small group classes, and that has been awesome. That's definitely my therapy.
Is it?
Yeah, because I can't hide. Because everyone, they're all newbies. They're all nervous.
Yeah,
they don't want to speak. It's all the spotlight's on me. Yeah. I'm having to fill in the silence with talking, which is not me. I'm thinking, this is so awkward. But I've been doing it for over a year now.
Yeah.
And I love it. I go in there consciously saying to myself, this is where you're growing the most. Let's really make awesome. The most of it. Don't just stand there and cruise through it. So
And what an awesome opportunity as well to just give back and give all the stuff you've learned.
Yeah. Yeah. And to learn
in a new way for you.
Yeah, yeah. I learned so much myself as well at that base level. If there's something, because it's not something you think about, the basics. If you're at an elite level or advanced or whatever, you're thinking about all these little cues. But when you go back to the basics and maybe realize you weren't doing something as good as you could have, the effect that's going to have from that base level all the way up is going to be way more than some little tweak, little toe pressure or something in the squat or whatever. So
building it from the foundation again, knocking some bricks down.
Yeah.
And so if you had to look back on your childhood or your past, or is there any kind of because obviously we're a collection of our impressions on our anatomy over the years, so there must have been or may have been a point in your life where you felt particularly judged in order to feel your expression, because that's the thing that jumped to your head, right? That you feel judged.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Definitely just the transition into high school. Yeah.
It's 11, 12, age 11 or 12.
Yeah. I don't really know. Well, okay. So the main thing, I'm hesitating to talk about it, but I'll just talk about it.
Yeah.
So I just had a group of friends who I'm still friends with. The dynamic of the friendship group has just changed. Everyone's grown up a bit. And I've forgiven, for how they sort of treated me, but they just didn't treat me very well.
Yeah.
So
right.
Just anytime I said something, it's oh, Alex, you're not funny. Alex, shut up. The joke. I was always the butt of the joke.
Yeah.
So I was just conditioned to think every time that I opened my mouth that I was just going to get ridiculed.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. So it was like that for 3 years at least. And then
really?
And then I sort of,
What a cruel motherfuckers. Seriously, the impression that leaves on a human body.
Yeah, look, and it's not, they weren't doing it to be mean to me. They definitely
No, it's just ignorance.
Well, yeah, and right? Definitely probably have their own sort of issues and stuff like that.
Yeah, which they've spread onto you.
It definitely sucked. But but I'm really good mates, with most of them. Still now sort of connected with them more. As a new friendship. And it's really nice as well.
Good.
And then, to be able to let go of that.
Right.
Yeah.
And did you talk about those things specifically with some of them as you grown up?
I tried to have conversation definitely at least once, but I just sort of got ridiculed for that. So I just sort of thought, well,
just let it go.
I'm just going to have to sort of, I just like made new friends. And then, yeah, just sort of, I just changed my whole like energy and everything. And I found that without even having the conversation, that, I don't know, that sort of reflected on them a little bit. Like when, well, a lot, when I hang out with them, like it's just totally different.
Yeah. Yeah. It's 100% reflects on them. Yeah. Wow. That's a big one, man. And that's a lot of years to be feeling something like that.
Yeah.
So it's no wonder that that's like a thing that is kind of put a limitation on your expression.
Yeah. And I found it pretty hard to sort of fit in all the way like from year seven anyway. It's like from when I was 13. And I think that's why I sort of like when I made that group of friends who were like considered to be cool, I sort of, it was more important to me to just have those friends than actually to be treated well.
Right.
Not that I thought that at the time, I wasn't consciously thinking that at the time, but looking like, analyzing it now, that's definitely what it was. So. Mm.
So you felt like you didn't fit in, or is that a thing? Like,
yeah,
I
went through a few different stages. I used to hang out at Flinders Street Station. Like with my emo fringe, used to wear my mum's eyeliner and stuff like that.
Great.
Yeah, I was in a band called the Stiffies.
You should bring that back, man.
Yeah, I found a t-shirt the other day that says the Stiffies, and then around one of our songs was called My Mum Says You're a Dickhead, and we spelt you're wrong, like not on purpose, on the t-shirt.
With like YO'RE.
Huh? YOUR.
Your mum says.
Oh no! Sorry, YOU'RE. Yeah.
So funny.
I still can't get it right.
That's hilarious. So, I'd love to see you with eyeliner again and like the emo fringe powerlifting.
Huh?
It'd be a cool look.
Yeah, that'd be a spectacle for sure. There's people who get up there and like not on the stage, but they. Like, because you have to wear, like, certain things, like, on the platform. But, like, in training and stuff, like, there's people who, like, there's a guy who, like, wears a mask. There's another guy, my physio, he dresses up as, like, Superman or, like, a superhero.
What kind of a mask is the mask guy wearing?
Just, like, you know the band Slipknot? It reminds me of that. Those sort of, like, horror sort of masks.
Yeah.
And people sort of, like give them shit for it, like because like
you should dress up as a fairy.
It just looks a bit, yeah. That'd be good. We actually have a tutu rule at our gym. If you don't pick up, if you like leave your weights out, you have to wear a tutu and sort of clean up the gym.
Oh,
yeah. But yeah. Anyway, so yeah, people sort of give these guys shit because they, I don't know, they look a bit like freaky or whatever. They're different, but I sort of get the whole. Going into the gym and putting your mask on and, you know, like that's your arena now and you have to, it's just like a way of like switching their mindset. Yeah. I think people don't get that. Yeah. Or people might be doing it themselves, but not realizing that that's their form of doing it, like by literally putting a mask on. So
it's fascinating. And do you think, that journey that you went through those 3 years, like what was it in you that kept you there? Was it a want of being accepted or a desire for belonging or?
Yeah, desire for belonging. And like, I just didn't know anything like what, I wouldn't have had anything else really. Like they were like my mates. So I just, I didn't know any different.
And did you have any like close friends or like family that like you talked to that stuff about during that time?
Yeah. I talked to my mum a lot.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah.
Moms are the best.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, talk to mum about that. And she would always sort of say, you know, to try and have the discussion. And then I sort of did. And then, but it just, yeah, they're just sort of too young and like immature. Just sort of that like boys mentality.
Yeah. And so you have to, I suppose, deal with it yourself, like let go of it. And that's a massive process, isn't it? Right.
Yeah.
So what's been some of the tools that have helped you let go of that, of the impression?
Yeah. The,
I suppose, forgiveness and such.
Well, about what we were saying yesterday about that reflection, the whole reflection thing. Like if I just look at them and I'm just, you know, angry or upset the whole time, like, that's only damaging me.
Yeah.
Like, I may as well recognize that, you know, they don't, like, I don't think, like, they, like, they're, you know, psychopaths and they actually, like, really were meaning to hurt me.
No.
It was just, like, just the dynamic of the friendship group that had been formed, and yeah, they didn't know any other way either. And, you know, maybe that was, like, you know, something was going on for them that they had to feel like, you know, they were taking out on others. So there's just no point, like, holding that against them.
No.
Yeah.
It's just such a bummer that there can be such cycles of suffering, like, with families, within friends, like, it happens everywhere within our culture, like, these rhythms. And I'm just thinking what the thing is that stops them. Like, in my practice, or, like, growing up in a, like, pretty extreme fundamentalist Christian church that was all about relationship and being selfless instead of selfish and laying your life down for God, essentially, in total devotion, through letting go of anything you want. Our methodology in that, in nuts and bolts of that, would be in relationships where I'm like, hey, man, we would just confront everything. So it would be confronting, vulnerable, vulnerable, vulnerable. Yeah. So, like, Alex, you actually affect me in a negative way when you say da-di-da, and it hurts my feelings because da-di-da. And then you, like, own it and then take accountability for what's yours, and I take accountability for what's mine. But you have this messy back and forth. And so that, for me, is like I still think a pretty good way to have fulfilling, rich relationships with one another. Because you're sharing openly and you're expressing what's true for you, and there's no, like, limits, and everyone's taking accountability for their part. The only problem is that in our cult, like, in my church, that, or that church, or the church, it's called Outreach International OI, it had the premise of a belief structure. So it was conditional on that belief of one, you know, we all believe the same mechanic, the narrative, the Christian Jesus, da-di-da, which is all wonderful and true, and there is truths in it, but obviously too much of a rigid attachment to the ideology, and it creates dissonance and duality within the spirit.
Right.
Anyway, that's my spirit, so I'm completely divulging. Anyway, what I'm saying is, like, that the way I think I've wanted to deal with it when things have come up since I've left that church is confronting things, and then I confront things with people or loved ones or friends or such, and then they're just like, what the fuck, man? Like,
yeah, it's too much.
It's way too much. And I'm doing it because I love you, like, because I do, because I want to get closer to you. This is my way of getting closer to you.
Yeah.
I'm sorry it's coming out a bit bad, but, you know, my intention is good.
Yeah.
But so my way of wanting to love someone or get closer or have a richer shared experience is actually, like, that's been a massive adjustment for me to not push in there, you know.
To tone that down a
little. To tone it down and meet them at where they're at, and then not, like, because essentially I'm just, like, trying to create a relationship based on my terms or the way I think things should be done.
Yeah, and it probably just puts them on the spot if they're not used to it, obviously.
Yeah.
Like, because you're being vulnerable, so then they feel like they have to do it in the same, and they're just like...
Yes, like, not used to that.
Up. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it's so interesting. It's so interesting. Because I do really think it's a good way, and I do think it's well-intended, and it's a good way to resolve things in friendship groups and in family and in relationship in general.
Mm.
But it has to be mutual, and there has to be inquiry there. Like, I can't just go saying these things. And I suppose unless it's a point where, like, hey, look, I'm really thinking our friendship is taxing enough that this behavior mechanism that you're doing is making me not want to be around you. Just want to let you know. You're like, five more days if you do it again.
Yeah.
Friendship's over. But it wouldn't be like that. I suppose a more gentle way is if you just start pulling away and letting go of your idea of what you want their relationship to be or what you want them to be.
Yeah, and it sends the same message.
It does, yeah.
Without actually having to say it, like, if they're not ready to actually have, like, a conversation.
If they don't want to hear it. And that's often the thing. People don't want to hear it, and that's fine and fair, because, like, there's no inquiry. They're not inquiring.
Mm.
But from my end, it's like, I feel like I know what needs to be said, but I just hold myself back. And that actually cripples my spirit, because that's, like, because that's the way I've dealt with it previously. So therefore I need to just now adapt and, bring myself to wherever they're at. And if it's not fruitful, or if it's not, right anymore. You can just start putting boundaries up and pulling back.
Mm.
Or just, I mean, the thing at the moment, we're talking like yesterday when we caught up, that thing of letting go is the letting go to attachment, to outcome, to ideas, and keeping that state of fluidity is where I feel happy and liberated.
Yeah.
Conversely, I feel depressed as fuck and suffering when I'm continually rigidly attached to ideas and how, and relationships are tricky like that, aren't they? Because they're two-way things. And so it's like a play of reality.
Yeah, and they're always changing as well. So like there's no...
There fuck, is no it's a complex life.
It is.
Fuck. Yeah. And share us with what you were saying yesterday, because I really love that Buddhist stuff that your mate told you.
Oh, yeah.
That blew your tits off.
Yeah. It's going to be hard for me to verbalize it because I should.
Yeah. We're still processing it.
I'm still processing it. Yeah. So just the idea of that everyone is alone.
That's right. So it's about loneliness.
Yeah. So I was struggling with loneliness. And then, my friend put it to me in this way to say, well, everyone is alone. And, you know, everyone, you have your own perspective of everyone. So everyone is just a reflection of yourself.
Mm.
Everyone is you. And like, let's not talk about loneliness. Let's say if someone says something, offensive or something like that.
Yeah.
Like, how can they hurt you if they are you?
Yeah.
Because you could take offense to that, or you could flip your perspective and not take offense to that.
Mm.
Like it's that easy.
So, because that is a real, like, and he said it with like this knowing it will blow your mind, and he saw your face getting blown.
Yeah.
And he goes, like, sit on that for a week.
Yeah.
Because it does blow your mind. Like, because I've had that experience, like in meditation, like that I am everything and everyone is me and I am everyone and everything.
Mm-hmm.
And that sense of unity is like what you get when you like can drop DMT or like ayahuasca or plant medicine and stuff.
Yeah.
But it's also just true in our normal state of consciousness, you know, underlying there. And I suppose it's just getting in touch with that in our awakened state, in our reality, in our manifested world of gross senses, and I can materialize and see things.
Yeah.
And being like, I am you, because you look so different to me. You know?
Yeah.
You know, so it doesn't really make sense to our logical brain. But
no, it doesn't, no.
But it's true, hey?
Yeah. It didn't make sense to me at first. Like, I'm looking at him just like, what? But then it starts to sort of click. I sort of, okay, I get what you're saying now, and I'm still processing that. So
yeah, because
it's cool.
It's so cool.
It's powerful.
Because you said it exalts you, or like you, it lifts you up. You've got that quote handy.
Yeah, I'll try and remember it. It's a Buddhist quote. It's so from the heavens above to the earth below, I alone am exalted.
Right, and I am alone being the localized I, the you individual self.
Yeah.
Exalt from all of it.
Yeah.
So you essentially, in that moment of loneliness, you realize that everyone's alone, essentially. Every human is alone also. And therefore, it exalts you from the slavery of the loneliness, because you rise up and then look around and go, oh my God, everyone's alone and I am them.
Yeah. And you're never going to be like, yeah. Still processing.
You're never going to like quench that sense of. You're never going to like for me, I thought there's no other way to resolve it.
Like, say if you're in a relationship, and like if you recognize that even though you're in a relationship, but you're both alone, if you're never going to use that person as a crutch, you know, like emotionally, like you might a little bit, but. Like, you're not going to rely on their reaction to form, like, how you feel about something. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah.
You're going to go within for the answer, and you kind of... So that when you identify that, you basically don't create bad habits or crutches in your state of well-being.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's so interesting.
It is.
I think that's a really, or any of this supreme knowledge, wisdom really just like hits you right between the eyes, you know, whoa, fuck.
Yeah, just that moment of enlightenment.
Yeah, man. What are your tools for like keeping a state of consciousness or your mindset with, you know, having to be such a, you're like, you know, a top athlete in the world, on the world stage?
Just my day-to-day thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, I have a morning ritual.
Mm.
Yeah, I'll take you through it. So I get up, I just dedicate the first 20 minutes or half an hour of the morning to myself. I actually...
Having a wank and then spreading it all over the yeah, veggie garden.
That's it.
To your old friends.
Yeah. Yeah, take this, fuckers. Yeah. Yeah, so... Also, I get up, I make my bed, clean my room, so it's all nice and peaceful in there.
Yeah.
I have a meditation seat. Before that, I light an incense.
Awesome.
I have a few favorites now, actually. But
what's your favorite current?
My favorite one is opium.
Opium. What's it smell like?
I don't know.
Poppies.
Good. Yeah. I guess opium. But
I don't even know what that would smell like.
No, me either. So I light that, and then so I take a seat in my meditation seat, and then I've got a journal. It started off as a gratitude journal that I would write three things in at night, but now I do it in the morning. And so sometimes I'll write some stuff that I'm grateful for, or sometimes I'll just like write whatever sort of comes from the heart, like whatever I've like feel like I need to write down, but it's generally like pretty positive. Just like a lot of like self-love stuff. It's all like that, like self-care, like self-love in the morning. So and then I'll write that, and then I have like my crystals, and I just place them on top. Not that doesn't like mean anything. It's just like it's just a thing that I've made up.
Yeah,
I've got like, I don't know. It's just this thing.
You saw someone do it once, and you're like, that looks good.
I don't know. It's almost like I've written this stuff in this journal, and I'm going to place it in front of me, and then place my crystals on it, and almost just like solidifies.
Mm.
I don't know. Just
They hold energy, right?
And yeah.
Like they've been, for neons of years, they've done it. I mean, like in culture.
Yeah. And then, I'll do a 20-minute meditation. So.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's awesome. And, you're pretty religious with that? Like,
And before the comp, like I was saying to you yesterday, I was like trying to be, you know, getting this different mindset and become this really super intense person. And I really put all my chips into that. And I sacrificed a bit of like mental health for that, I'd say. Like I wasn't really meditating or anything. So I've been pretty religious with that since then. Like just because I've realized how much of a difference it actually makes from not doing it and then going back to doing it. And I was like I messaged a friend afterwards. I messaged my mum actually. I was like, because I'd talked to her about it. And I messaged her and I was like, wow, I feel like totally liberated now. I feel like just like myself. Like, yeah, it was awesome. So just after the first time back doing it. So I've been doing it.
It's so funny how those...
every day since then. So
that's great, man. We need them, don't we? Like I didn't meditate this morning. I feel like I can't wait for after this podcast to have a good meditation.
Yeah.
It's like, it's just...
you just sort of like float into your day, especially... I'm lucky because I don't have to rush into my day either. Like I don't have to start work until 3, really, and so
and you work hard for a couple of hours and then go home at 6.
Yeah, and so like, and I train and I do stuff before that, but I don't have to do anything. So I can like really like let it like so sort of like meditate and then let that sort of like transfer into my day.
Yeah, yeah.
Rather than just meditating, getting up and then smashing a coffee and going to work or something.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And just sort of defeating the whole purpose. So.
Dude, that's awesome. That's actually a fucking key lesson for any meditators out there, that like to softly transition. Like one little tip is like to more gently open your eyes, like transition more softly, and then just don't rush yourself. Like I think it's what you're saying is a really good point.
Yeah, I actually I've done a few classes as well as yours at
what?
Yeah.
Who are these people?
I did a pranayama class at A Space in Collingwood, and this the one that I what did she teach? Oh, so after the meditation, she does this thing where she sort of like, imagine like the spine just like twirling like that.
Yeah.
So you're sort of like...
Yeah, great. Like a snake or yeah. a 3D snake.
And I find that's really nice to just sort of like loosen everything up after a meditation. So, yeah.
It's awakens the kundalini probably.
Yeah.
Or your chakras just like pop open.
Mm.
It is all about energy flow, isn't it, for your anatomy? Like,
yeah, for sure.
And that's why you get disease in like certain areas if you haven't got if you got blockages. And man, it's good science.
Mm.
It's good science.
It's great.
Spirit science. That's so cool, man. It's really really cool. Well, I massively appreciate you like sharing because it is obviously a challenge to do.
Yeah.
From what you're saying, and I really appreciate you being vulnerable and sharing. And I think it will help many others that are in similar feel zones to you.
Yeah, no, thanks for giving me the opportunity. It's been awesome.
Awesome.
Cool.
We'll follow you on, what's your social handles where people can check you out on social media?
It's just on Instagram. It's just Alex Deakin, so Deakin, D-E-K-E-N, and then P-L.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
Well, thank you.
Cool, thank you.